So, the title for my talk tonight is a bit of a tongue twister, but I am a speech and language therapist, so I have to bring challenges into every talk. So, the title is The Perfectly Imperfect Path of Parenting Towards Enlightenment. So, I'll say that again. The Perfectly Imperfect Path of Parenting Towards Enlightenment. And as you'll hear as my talk goes on, hopefully not too long, that actually, you know, my parenting has been perfectly imperfect, but there have been lots and lots of opportunities for Buddhist practice within that. And that's what I want to share with you this evening. Okay. So when I found this quite hard to write, and I have written in my head several versions of this talk, and Taranita actually was emailing us about this series, I think in August, wasn't it? So I've had lots of months to write lots of different versions, so what you're getting is today's version of this talk. And I think I found it so hard, and sort of quite stressful as well, in that I think this is such an important area to me, because my eldest daughter is 24, and I came across Buddhism when she was 2.5. So actually, I have been a parent for all of my Dharma life. So it's been a massive, massive part of my life. And it's been my main context for practice, along with work. So this talk is really in two parts. So I wanted to give my children a bit of opportunity to have their say about how it's been for them to have me as a Buddhist parent. So I'm going to first of all start off by talking about my practice through the different stages, and I'm going to use the Wheel of Life as a symbol for this. Now, this was the first symbol I ever came across when I came to the Buddhist Centre on Cromwell Road 22.5 years ago, I think it was. And, no, it must be 21.5 years ago. My maths isn't very good. And the chair of the centre was Ajahnavantra at the time, and we meditated, and then he talked about the Wheel of Life. And this has been a really, really important symbol for me throughout my practising years. So I want to link in the different states that I've been in as being a parent, linked to this symbol. And what I'm going to be doing is, it's quite a complex symbol, but I'm just going to be focusing on the six realms that are in the middle here, and I will explain a little bit about those if people aren't particularly familiar with them as I go through. So that's going to be the first part. And then I decided to try and have a conversation with my eldest daughter about the experience of having me as a Buddhist mum, sort of in the way of the Listening Project. I don't know whether people listen to Radio 4 and listen to the Listening Project. It's where they get two people in a booth and they sort of chat about sometimes really ordinary things and sometimes really extraordinary things, and then they just take a snippet and play it for a few minutes on the radio, and they often have those several times in the day. This is a slightly longer piece, and the questions I ask to Hannah, they might sound a little bit superficial or a little bit fluffy, you know, they're not really big Dharma questions, but that's actually where our interaction is and where we actually meet as mother and daughter around my Buddhist practice. So hopefully you'll find it interesting what she has to say about how it's been for her. Okay, right, so moving into the Wheel of Life. So I'm going to enter the Wheel of Life. The idea is that you don't actually sort of start in one place and then go round. The idea is that, you know, at different times of your life, you might be dipping into the different realms according to what conditions have arisen and how you are. So I'm actually going to enter it at the Hungry Ghost realm. The Hungry Ghosts are depicted as being funny little creatures with big bellies and very small mouths. And the idea is that actually nothing really satisfies them, and they're always really hungry and they're always really looking for something and some nourishment. And Sangharakshita actually says that it is the realm of neurotic desire. And I want to talk about this realm because this is actually before I had children, and I think I was a bit of a hungry ghost. I was a real seeker. I was looking for something to try and fulfil me in life. And I thought that having children would do that. I seemed to walk around with this great big hole in my belly, and I was always looking for something. So I was hoping that they would actually sort of fill that void for me. Another reason that I decided to have children was because my sisters had done it, and as I'm the youngest, I thought it was probably a good idea to do just the same as my sisters had done. So I don't think I was living the life of a true individual that Bunty, you know, encourages us to be in the Dharma life. And the other really mundane reason was that I was fed up of working full-time, and I thought having children would be a really good reason for me to go part-time. So they weren't really high and lofty ideals for me having children in the first place. And I did, so I had Hannah, and then later on I got pregnant with Molly. And to my disappointment, I found that actually, even though I love them dearly, they hadn't actually filled up that void in my life, and I was still looking for something. And it was only coming across the Dharma when Hannah was 2.5 that I felt, oh, perhaps this is what I've been looking for. So with the realms as well, there are Buddha figures that help you to sort of move out of that realm and towards enlightenment. And the Buddha figure for the Hungry Ghost realm is around, let's just find it because I've written it down, is actually to get nourishment. It's to actually find something that's going to nourish you. And the Buddha gives the Hungry Ghost food and drink so that they can feel full up and happy. So I found that it was the Dharma that actually started to fill that void for me. The next realm that I'm going to talk about in my path of parenting is then moving into the Titan realm. So this is the realm of the warrior. So I'd come across the Dharma and I'd found something I really wanted. And Titans are supposedly very competitive and quite restless. And I went into this really restless stage. And this was linked, I believe, because I was doing lots and lots of comparison with these wonderful, exciting people that I'd met through Triratna who had all this freedom. And then I suddenly found that I had two small children and I was living a very routine life in a very sort of middle-class area. And, you know, I had lots of good things in my life, but then I suddenly saw what all these other people in the FWBO, as it was then, had instead. And I became very, very restless. And I wasn't really focused on my children then, I think. I was to some degree, but I wasn't wholehearted in my parenting. And I became very envious of other people that I was meeting in Triratna. And that had a very negative effect, obviously, on my relationship with my, you know, the relationship with my husband. And really, you know, what I think would have been really helpful for me there would have been to really look at the fantastic conditions that I did actually have, like my health. I had healthy children, my family were healthy, I had an interesting job, I had enough money to go on retreat. Lots of really, really positive things were happening for me at that time. But I was quite consumed with envy. And in fact, the Buddha in that realm is a green Buddha, and he holds a flaming sword of wisdom. So I think I needed a bit more wisdom in my life. And I'd only just come across the Dharma, and I think I wasn't very integrated. And I think because I wasn't integrated, I was started kicking out. And it ended up with my relationship ending as a result of that. So, drink. So then I was left mainly on my own with two children. They were, I think, the ages of 9 and 6 when that happened. And you might expect that I would then have gone into the hell realm, but actually, for me, I think I moved more into the human realm then because I had no choice. I had to really focus on my children, and it really distilled down for me, you know, the importance of relationship with my family and my life. And I just had to get on with things, really. And I, if anything, it made me grow up, I think, having gone through that. And instead of being jealous of what other people had, I just got on with what I had, really. And I think my practice really deepened at this point. So the human realm, Bhante says, is a realm of balance and harmony. And there aren't, this is true Bhante style, there aren't unreasonable opposites. Okay, so you're not being pulled in all directions, you know, there is some integration happening there. And I think a bit like Michelle said last week, you know, it was really important to find the spaces in between all the busyness. But I found out that I really quite like being busy, which is a bit of a habit of mine. And what was really helpful at that time was my spiritual friends, because they really helped to reflect back to me when I was being too busy, and sort of trying to get me to have more spaces in my life. But I did feel quite fulfilled. I was coming to the Buddhist Centre quite a lot, and you'll hear when Hannah speaks to you that probably I went a little bit too much, and maybe I should have been at home watching X Factor a bit more. It was just quite a good time really. And the thing about when I was in that realm as well, and say as a parent, when you're so busy and you only say go on one retreat a year for 2 weeks and you might have the odd weekend, you actually take advantage of every single talk, every single moment that you have. You really get everything out of it, and I think that was really important. And even though people might say, oh, it takes longer if you're a parent to get ordained or all this sort of thing, actually, you know, it's all there. And I think people do recognise, as long as you're really working with your conditions, that, you know, that you can make progress, whether you can go on retreat every month or not. So at the same time as being in the human realm, I also, I think, around that time, so it wasn't all hunky-dory, I slipped into the animal realm a few times. And actually, at one point, I took a step back from this Buddhist centre, and I didn't come here for about 4 years, and I didn't have the spiritual friendship that I'd had before. And I think as a result of that, I was more likely to slip into the animal realm. So the animal realm is one that's described as being indulgent and purely sensual. And I think in relation to parenting, this was when I wasn't giving my children proper, wholehearted, full attention. And there were a couple of times when, you know, I put myself above their well-being, probably, that I feel quite ashamed about. I think this was sort of my stage of lazy parenting. And there's a couple of examples of that. So there was one example when Molly was quite little. You know, I was a bit full up and I just wanted to read my book when I took her to the park. And so I sat and read my book and I didn't notice that she'd wandered off, and we couldn't find her for half an hour. And, you know, and it was a pretty awful experience. And it was because I wasn't present with her at that time. And another example, which is one that I haven't repeated, was going out for a very big night out when I actually had responsibilities with them the next day, and really not being in a fit state to parent them at all the next day, and having to spend all the next day in bed and having to ask somebody else to take them to ice skating or whatever it was they needed to go to. And I think that was a real animal realm, and I felt real shame about A, letting that happen, and B, the fact that they saw me in this state as well, that I wasn't able to get out of bed. It was not a good time. But the good thing about having a context, a Buddhist context for when that sort of things happens, is that you can actually work through it and through some, you know, a practice that has been really useful for me in all this and really supported my parenting. Has been the confession practice. Now that sounds, if people aren't aware of what I'm talking about when I talk about confession practice, it's not like going into a Catholic church and just saying what you've done wrong. You know, it's a real unpacking of the conditions that have led you to act in a way in which you feel shame, and then trying to work out ways that you don't then make those mistakes again by putting different conditions in place. And I had a very strong confession practice with my friend Catherine, and that's practice really helped me when these sort of situations have arisen. So it's not that you just have to go and hide under a stone and feel guilty for the rest of your life. You can actually do something about it, be proactive, and then try and help it not happen again. Okay, so we've got two realms left. We've got the hell realm and the God realm. So I'm going to go into the hell realm now. And when I was thinking of this talk, I rang my friend Sangha Ketu. And he said to me, just tell them how awful it was being a parent, how difficult it was, you know, just tell them about the hell realm. And actually, you know, I just listened to him and I thought, but that isn't actually how it was for me, even when it was difficult, when I didn't have much money, when I wasn't getting much sleep, when everything was a little bit too busy. And it didn't feel hellish at that point. You know, it was hard, but it wasn't the hell realm. I think the time that I have been in the hell realm as a parent is when my children have been suffering and I felt completely powerless to actually help them out of their suffering. And this has happened on a few times, particularly with Molly. She was very much bullied when she was in secondary school. She's very thin and quite a sensitive young woman. And she was bullied really badly. And it's not, you know, teachers were ringing me up saying that, you know, somebody had got her on the floor and or thrown something at her. And they were being very mean verbally. And she was also cyber bullied as well. Really, really nasty, nasty, nasty things were posted online about her. And we went through it one time, and then 2 years later, she suddenly found all these hidden posts that were the same. So we had to sort of relive it 2 years later. So, you know, that was really, really hard. And the practice that really helped me at that point, because when they're little and they fall over, they can just have a hug from their mum, can't they? And you can go and buy them cheesy chips and then they're all right again, or a bit of chocolate or whatever. But actually, when they're a teenager, it's really hard. And I think the hell realm came in more when they were teenagers, when they were starting to break away and you couldn't really, you know, they didn't see you as being all powerful to make everything all right as well. So the practice that really helped me was a practice of Tonglen when I was in these situations. And that's a meditation, which is very simple, but I found to be really effective. And it's where you breathe in the suffering of yourself and you breathe in the suffering of others. And then when you breathe out, you're breathing out compassion for yourself and for others. And it's a very simple practice, but I found it incredibly profound. And that was the only response I could have in those sort of situations. And the other piece of Dharma that really helped me when I was in that realm was reflecting on the three marks of existence, the three lakshanas, the fact that things are impermanent, so it will come to an end. Even though this feels like acute suffering now, it will come to an end. In substantiality, the fact that actually my children aren't fixed, so their response to whatever happening isn't fixed. The thing that is happening to them is going to change, and my responses will change as well. So the fact that everything is in process, I found really helpful, rather than sort of fixing this problem and then sort of making it worse by making it into concrete or whatever, sort of solidifying it. And then also just the fact that who am I to think that my kids aren't going to suffer, really, because everybody suffers in some shape or form, and why should I think that my kids are going to escape from that? So, you know, just think, yeah, they are going to suffer, and it will change, and we will move on. And there will be, you know, good times will come. So I found those teachings really helpful when I was sort of inhabiting that realm. And and the Buddha, what the Buddha offers for people in that realm is actually relaxation and ease, and sort of it says that he offers nectar, so that sort of soothing response. So trying to sort of put some soothing into my life at that point, which I think the Tonglen did. I also had a lot of hot baths at that point too. Hot baths always relax me. So trying to put soothing in when that sort of thing's happening, and trying to soothe the children as well, though you can't actually necessarily fix the problem. And then finally, I'm going to go into the God realm. I think all the way through, there's been little snippets of being in the God realm. I think I've probably inhabited the human realm more than the God realm. And the God realm is a place where there are no problems whatsoever. It's a very aesthetic place. You have this very beautiful aesthetic experience of being in the God realm. And it's the realm of the devas. And, you know, reflecting on when I've been in that realm as a parent, I think it's been the really simple things that have helped me to inhabit this realm. So it's been things like going for long dog walks with the children, getting completely wet and having a hot chocolate with them afterwards, you know, the really simple things. It's been about reading to them at night, you know, reading. My favourite book as a child was Watership Down, and I read that to Molly and she loved it, and we both loved it together. It was that sort of feeling of connection. We did quite a lot of cooking together when they were younger, and I think it's at that place of giving them, as I say, giving them full attention and then returning that full attention as well, because as teenagers sometimes you you might want to be giving them full attention but they don't want to know you. So, you know, I think it's that reciprocity really helped to be in that realm with them. I asked Molly what her memories were about, you know, positive times. She found it easier, which isn't surprising, to think of difficult times. but her one of her main things was having cheesy chips. We had a routine of cheesy chips after she went to ballet on a Thursday, every Thursday, and we sat down and watched rubbish telly and ate cheesy chips together. And that's one of her main memories. And another one that she wanted me to mention, I said, oh, I don't know whether I should be mentioning this, but I'll tell you anyway, was when Hannah decided she was going to give her a sex education lesson. When Molly was about 10 and Hannah was about 14, we were all sitting on my bed, and Hannah got very animated about Fred the sperm and drawing lots of like pictures in cartoon format in order to help Molly to understand the birds and the bees. And that's one of our, you know, all of us remember that because we just laughed so much. And it was a real relief for me because I didn't have to then tell her anything about it. Hannah did my job. But it was a real point of connection. And I think there was balance, there was ease, there was, you know, real delight. We were really delighting in each other at that point. So that's one of Molly's memories. and I think sort of Dharma practice, I was thinking that Dharma practice has really helped me to be more in the upper realms, which are, you know, particularly the realms of the human realm and the God realm. I think Dharma practice really helps me to do that. I mean, to come out of the animal realm, the Buddha gives you civilization, sort of tries to make you more into a civilized human being. And I think that's what Dharma practice does. I think it helps you to be truly human and then see beyond that and see the bigger picture. And I think that really strengthens my faith in Dharma practice. And in the God realm, there is the sort of near enemy of the God realm, or the thing that you can slide into is complacency. But I think, you know, my experience of being a mother is that you're not actually in the God realm for that long. That you slip back into the other realms quite quickly. So even though there are these lovely peak experiences, you know, I don't think I've ever resided in the God realm for long enough in order to become complacent. Okay, so that's my first part. So now I want Hannah to speak to you if technology works. And if not, we'll have a comfort break. I want to sort it out. So, right. It did work earlier. Okay, so just a bit more about Hannah. So I think I was quite brave interviewing her because she's quite feisty. She's got a very strong character. So an example of when she was about 4 and we were trying to do this, get her to go to sleep in a bedroom on her own, and we put a stairgate across it. And it's one of these stairgates with the bars, and they're all health and safety checked, you know, they should be really bulletproof. So I remember Chris and I were sitting down at the kitchen table and I could hear her screaming. I said, no, we must, you know, I'm very bad with rules, but this time I was going, no, we mustn't go up to her, we mustn't go up to her. In the end, he gave in before me and he walked upstairs, and she had managed to push her head through the bars. So her head was on one side and her body was on the other. So she's a very determined young woman, and she still has that trait about her to some degree. So, I took my life in my hands by asking her some questions. But the great thing about being asked to do a talk as well is that I would never have had this conversation with her if Taranita hadn't asked me. So even though really half of me really didn't want to stand here at all, in fact, probably 75% of me, you know, it's given me this really lovely opportunity to have this sort of dialogue with my kids that it wouldn't have come up otherwise. So, thank you. Right, let's try and do it. Okay, so we're sitting in the kitchen. We'd just run a 10K together, which we'd just about come last in. And Hannah had waited for me at every corner. Then we'd been to the pub, had a big pub lunch, and then we were sort of sitting having a cup of tea at the kitchen table. Let's see if it'll work.
Okay, so it is October the 20-something? 22nd. And Hannah and I are sitting at our kitchen table. We are surrounded by three dogs, so we might have some interruptions in this recording. And we're just going to attempt to have a conversation about Hannah having me as a Buddhist mum. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Hannah.
Yes.
Have you got any strong memories from the time when you were growing up? Obviously, you've left home now.
So, yeah, we firstly established that I have terrible memory as a whole, but in general, just I guess it's always been a constant in sort of our house and our upbringing, you know, forever Buddhist figurines around the house, you know, I don't know, just in general it's always been a bit of a constant. Some sort of stronger memories coming to your sort of mitra ceremony and then your send off for being ordained. So those are two big ones because they're very big in your life. So it was quite a lot of excitement there.
Well, how was it when your friends came round and we had sort of Buddhist statues and things around?
I liked it. It's a bit different, isn't it? It's interesting. And actually, lots of people, just in general, see Buddhism as a, you know, quite interested in it. It's quite an interesting fact. You know, it's an interesting sort of talking point. Mum has been, like, so in my first few jobs, I've had to say, well, tell us an interesting fact about yourself, where you come from. And I just say, I've got a Buddhist mum, and that kind of, that stands on its
own.
Ticks
the box.
So yours, you make me interesting. No, but I think it's fine, like, friends, like, you know, there's been a few times when you'd have study, you'd come around and have, you know, study, and we'd all be locked into the living room, and then you'd hear chanting through the wall, and I think that's a bit, that's you know, it's different to anyone of my friends. I haven't had that experience. But
it didn't stop your friends from coming around, though.
No, not at all.
That's good to hear. And how was it, so you came to the Buddhist Centre a couple of times, how was that? Because I know that you used the Buddhist figure Tara for your GCSE art project as well.
I always felt a bit, I think you had to sometimes really persuade me to come to the Buddhist Centre because it's something which is just out of the ordinary of like my normal teenage life. But whenever I went there, you know, one thing I've always said to people is that they're the most like lovely people. Like everyone gives you really long, big hugs, and everyone's really interested, as in interested in like me because of you, and they're also loving and stuff. I didn't go that too many times, but when I went, you know, all nice. But it's something that I guess, you know, lots of talking about, you know, lots of just talking.
Molly made that amazing cake.
I did also walk past you one time on the Gloss Road meditating in the window with my dad, and that was a bit strange. In the shop window. But again,
I think that was an open day, wasn't
it? Oh, that's mum. Hey, I just walked past. That's fine. Keep walking.
Pretend you don't know her. And how was it when I went on retreat? Because I know, particularly as you've got older, So when you were young, you used to go and stay with your dad. But as you got older, I used to leave you to look after your younger sister and the dog in the house.
So I think like, in hindsight, I probably was maybe a bit annoying because I had to be responsible for a dog and a sister for 2 weeks, for example. And that, again, not many parents maybe would have left it. But at the same time, I also loved it because I was a 16-year-old, 17-year-old and had the house to myself for 2 weeks. But
there were pros and cons.
Pros and cons. But I guess it's a bit of responsibility. But again, because you'd always gone away for 2 weeks in the summer, and you know, like when generally when we were growing up, those 2 weeks we'd try and time it when I'd go away with dad. It was always again just sort of a constant that mum would go away for 2 weeks in the summer.
Yeah.
So I think if it suddenly randomly started, you know, if you randomly went away for 2 weeks and you weren't used to it, it'd be different. But because it was always, you know, a regular thing, you'd go away for a weekend, and stuff. And I guess the non-contact thing could be hard if I, you know, if anything ever went wrong. But there were times, you know, when you would drop me a WhatsApp message and check in everything's okay. So you weren't 100%, you know, silent content if needs be.
Yeah. Because there was that one time when I went on solitary, but we did agree that I would contact you a couple of times in that, and that actually that time one of your friends had died.
Yeah.
So that was quite important then for me to be in contact with you after I knew that.
Yeah. So I think it's a judgment, sort of ad hoc. You know, as when and where, if there's something going on that needs you to be in contact, like, you know, my friend died, so that's a different situation entirely. You know, as in being a parent and Buddhist, you can't, like, there's not a rule, you can't say you're not going to contact my daughter at all for the 2 weeks when she may need me. But it was fine, but
so there was some flexibility in accordance to what you needed.
You know, just a text every few days saying, okay, you okay? I have an hour. Reply now, or I won't. You know, I don't think we ever spoke on the phone. It's just a text, wasn't it?
Yeah, just checking in, really.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just to give you a context, my dog. Mum has currently got three dogs, literally on her lap.
And were there any particular pearls of wisdom that I was able to impart? Do you think? Many of them.
I think a massive one that kept creeping up was the second arrow?
Two arrows?
And just sort of saying that if you're upset, you know, I'd get upset or worked up, and then I'd get annoyed at myself for being upset and worked up. And it was sort of, you know, just in you know, if you're sad with yourself for a reason, or just accept that and don't get annoyed at yourself for doing that, you know, that kind of thing.
That's so don't add to it,
there's no point. And then I think that's quite a nice one that I've tried to have taken on.
Yeah, because didn't you share that with your housemates in Leeds when you were at uni in Leeds?
Yeah, and it's quite a nice one to sort of just, I think it's very applicable in life for, like, everyone gets upset and hurt by things, and a lot of the time people then get annoyed themselves for being hurt and upset about a small thing, and so it's quite a transferable one.
Yeah. And is there anything that you wish that we'd done differently, or I'd done differently in hindsight? I know when we chatted about this before, you were saying that you don't think we sat and watched telly enough together.
Always out, so I think it would have been nice, for you to have had spent more time with us, potentially. Like, you know, you'd have work full time, and sometimes you'd have work, and then you'd have the Buddhist Centre 2-3 times a week when you're kind of, you know, really focusing that in your life. And then Molly and I would sort of just have a lot of evenings in on our own. You'd never watch TV just because you're so busy. And because obviously you work for yourself, so it would have been, you know, when some parents were able to just sort of have a Monday night in, you didn't really have Monday nights in because that was your night for the Buddhist Centre and things, you know?
Yeah, it meant that you could watch all that trashy telly though.
Yeah, without you looking over me,
Yeah. And there was that other thing that I know Molly's talked about sometimes if something's gone wrong at school, sometimes she felt that perhaps I empathise a bit too much with the person who is causing her the difficulty rather than supporting her. Have you got any comments about that? Or?
I guess, I can kind of see where Molly's coming from, and sometimes you'd be quite focused on the Buddhist teachings that you kind of would sort of forget about the actual, like, situation that's going on in front of you. So it would be like, well, actually, you know, the Buddhist saying would say this. It's like, oh, actually, no, like, just put part Buddhism aside, put that aside, and just, like, hear out, listen, and, like, there doesn't need to be a meaning or a reason or I don't know what the word is, you know, like a symbolic thing, or like, this is gonna, in the wider picture, this is gonna happen. I'm just feeling really pissed off right now. Be in the moment with me instead of trying to think of this, you know, be a bit spiritual with it. That makes sense. But that's for someone who potentially isn't as spiritual as you.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah, come on, get a bit real.
No, not everything has to relate to a Buddhist teaching.
Well, it might. You all might think differently. From where you're sitting.
Where I'm sitting, yeah.
And just sort of to finish off, how do you feel about religion and faith now? How is it for you?
So I would love to have more faith. Like, I like faith. I think it's a beautiful thing to have, and if you have it, great, and having a greater meaning. I know like for you in Buddhism, when you come back from retreats, how happy you are, and you, you know, going away and being immersed and seeing how passionate you are. I always talk about having, I'm a passionless person, so this is, but seeing how, you know, you've kind of found this sort of higher calling, but the passion there is something that really drives you. I think that's a really beautiful thing, and when people have that, I think it's amazing, and I would like to find that. And I think I'm spiritual, but I don't really know in what. I don't think I can put myself into one, like, pot, pie, whatever. But I don't hugely agree with sort of organised religion and the hierarchy. So, you know, when you're wanting to becoming ordained, there are lots of times when, you know, you would feel, you know, just, I think it's the challenges that you face coming as you're getting ordained, and also the similar, like, and there's any, as in any organised religion, isn't like, you know, just having to, you know, getting the sort of step up and things you have to do.
It definitely becomes quite intense, I think, the closer you get to ordination, that's for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah. So maybe there was something about that that you felt was less authentic, maybe, or I don't know.
Yeah.
I know sometimes I'd had some feedback and I was a bit upset about some feedback, and I think maybe you felt for me in that situation and protective of me, I think.
Yeah, because it's not very, it's not, I know, like, in the end, it's, you know, it all works out, and there's a reason for that, and the reason that where you've got to now. But sometimes it was hard to see. Hard to see that kind of happen. That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. So it just sounds like that something around that you really witness how inspired I can become by the Buddhist faith.
Definitely.
And that's something that you would like to find for yourself, but in whatever shape or form it might take.
Definitely. And on the whole, all good.
Brilliant. Thank you, Hannah.
Okay, that stopped. Okay, so I just want to finish just with a couple of quotes from a really good chapter. This is a great book. Just to say, Buddha's Daughters, it was bought by Catherine again for me. And there's a chapter that involves something around parenting, and I just think she puts things really well, so I'm just going to read you a couple of paragraphs from that and then hand you back to Taranita. Okay. So, this woman who is, let me just find out who she is, Karen Mazin Miller, I don't know whether people know of her. She says, there is no right way to parent, there is only a right now way. Like it or not, this is the offering that children give us over and over, right now. We reflexively swat it from their hands. They return with the gift again in fresh packaging. Children always show us the present moment unfolding. Our full attention is the only thing of value we can give them in return. Good thing too, because it's the only thing that makes a lasting difference. And then she goes on to say, so she was chatting with her mum about what sort of schooling to send her children to, and her mum replies, Karen, all that matters is love. So this is the mushy bit that Michelle did at the end of the last talk, parenting talk. Okay. She says, so Karen, all that matters is love. That's what children require, not what we call the best, not what we think is right, not a push or a shove, but true love, love without judgment or condition, love for them as they are right now and for whatever they become, and equal love for our fumbling, tumbling tutelage. Within this open field of possibility, anything can happen, and all of it is called play, not work, and not the most difficult job in the world.